Welcome to another edition of the Music Video and Podcast brought to you by your super good friends at imvdb.com, the Internet Music Video Database. My name is Adam, and with me from Brooklyn, New York, someone who just ordered some shawarma from, I'm not really sure where, some sort of delivering street vendor. That's what they have in New York. Mr. Doug Klinger, how are you, Doug?
No, it's super good. It came from Bushwick Pita somewhere. I can't remember. It has the word pita and Bushwick in it, and I'm doing super good.
And they paid $1,000 for that ad, so they're going to be upset that we bungled that.
Yeah, right.
And then with this, as usual, north of the wall from Fringe Music Fix, a person who took one for the team this week and downloaded the Taylor Swift Blank Space Experience app, which he's going to tell us about later, Mr. Adam Alexander. How are you, Adam?
I'm great. Two thumbs up to the app prematurely.
Ooh, okay. Well, we'll have a conversation about that. And then with us on this podcast, continuing our streak of some pretty awesome guests, we have director Mr. Brendan Vaughn, who directed a video that came out this week, which we love and we'll talk about, and that is I Feel Everything by Waters. Brendan, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Now, this video came out, we're recording this on November 13th. This video came out, I guess, Doug, is it technically last week?
Last Friday, yeah.
Last Friday. Well, why don't you give us a little summary of the video?
So, essentially, we follow Van as he explores all these, I guess, dingy, creepy environments that are based at this hotel.
It's at a motel, but the motel is next to a bowling alley, right?
No, it's right next to a cafe and a hospital, just in case anyone gets hurt on set. So,
really?
Which is very convenient.
What's that neon light though? With the isn't that a bowling alley neon light? I got really
no. Cool. It's a cafe actually.
Oh wow. Okay. I'm one of those people who go there based on the sign, and I would be disappointed that there was no bowling.
Well, there were people showing up for rooms. Like people would ride by on bicycles and be like, "You guys got a room for the night?" And be like, "No, it's actually a set."
Well, did you guys buy out all the rooms for that one shoot?
So people live there. They're kind of like crackheads. And then the rest of it, there's like only like four rooms that are available to shoot in. So what you don't see is during these takes is there's like little crackhead guys like popping their head out to see what's going on. And there was actually one take where a guy actually came out, walks out, like checks everything out, has no idea what the fuck's going on, and goes back into his room with no shirt or anything, like just underwear.
Is that the Pink Motel? Is that where you guys shot this?
Yeah.
Doug, sweet. You seem to have some knowledge about this place.
I've been to the Pink Motel before. It was also being used for a music video shoot. It's used in a fair amount of music videos. It's a pretty famous music.
Fair is a nice word. It's pretty overused.
I mean, it's perfect for this type of, you know, this style of look that you guys obviously were after. It's got that kind of like crackhead, dilapidated, dingy, and it's perfect because it's got a diner kind of on the same property, and so you could use either.
But yeah. there's you know, for a music video that is shot at, you know, this motel location, they don't spend a lot of, you know, guys don't spend a lot of time like inside the motel. There's these
no, he works the entire space. Like the whole idea was for him to kind of just be constantly exploring these new environments so that you never really get bored of the image. Mm-hmm. Because like a lot of videos, you know, you can give people time to, you know, explore the space, but like this is like you go in and you kind of like get this brief moment and then you keep moving on, you know, so it's just like this like constant stimulation. It's like Americans don't like to watch, you know, we have short attention spans, so it kind of catered to that on this one.
And who was your Steadicam op for this?
It was Jerry Frank, the guy with two names, and the DP was Zach Adams, who I work with on everything.
And there's a great, I want to ask you about the band move, because, and if this was one shot or not, because early in the video, you know, there's a shot of the full band set up, and which looks like a relatively complicated setup. There's a, you know, the drummer, like two guitarists, keyboard, and then roughly like maybe like 50 seconds later, we see them in a completely different space. Was that all one continuous shot?
No, I wish I could say it was. To ruin the magic, there's definitely a cut in there.
I'm so bad at finding these cuts, because you could have completely
no. Our special effects guy was like fucking killer on it. Like, I was like, whoa, dude, like, I directed the video and I barely, like, come on. but so essentially when it goes into the girl, the second room with the girl, like, doing her little pasty dance, there's a cut right at that door frame.
And she's distracting.
But I mean, like, even if you're paying attention, like, if you're actually, like, looking for it, you can barely notice it. Like, the guy did a killer job.
So when you were planning this video, did you work in – you worked these cut points into it?
Well, essentially, like, obviously when you start a concept, you don't know where you're going to go with it. And then you kind of have to tailor it to your location. So once we found the location, I, like, me and my writing partner kind of go back and be like, all right, so this is the distance that we have from each one. And then we had to figure out how to time out each shot, because I originally intended for each of the rooms to be right next to each other, not the whole entire distance, which actually ended up working out in favor. But there was a lot of timing, like, down to the second, like, where, like, my AD had to be right next to me, like, all right, we're landing this at this moment. Like, a lot of time, you know, practicing and timing on that.
And we should mention that in that hotel, or that in that room, the girl with the pasties, I guess is the best way to describe it, is Michael Q. Schmidt, who has been on this podcast before.
Really?
People, yeah.
The legend himself.
Believe it or not, Michael Q. Schmidt has a relatively involved history with IMVDB. Back when we were filmedinsert.com, he was on an episode of the podcast, as well as a very, thankfully, very low view count video. that Doug and I made when we went to LA in March of 2012.
That's great.
But
those videos might change, because they're currently highlighted on my Vimeo account. So
you're drawing attention right now.
Look for them there. They're insane. Q Schmidt appears in part two. It's a 2-part cliffhanger series. So yeah, if you really want to see Michael Q. Schmidt in our ridiculous video,
that will not be in the show notes.
No, the guy is wild. I'll say that the guy is wild. The guy brought multiple pairs of underwear. he kept trying to sell me on, like, which underwear, you know, we should go with. We ended up settling on the stained whitey tidies because I felt that was most fitting. But yeah, I mean, the guy sent me multiple pictures of him in his underwear and a bikini. Seen a lot of that guy.
How did you cast this video? Was it like traditional casting?
Just traditional casting, and some of it was friends, actors that I know. You know, my girlfriend's in it, and other director's girlfriend from the collective. Just you know, we didn't have a lot of money to work with, so a lot of it was friends.
Yeah,
because there's this great kind of, I guess, last third of the video where you guys are in what looks like a pool that has no water in it. Is that the best way to describe it? And this is maybe the stupidest question I've asked on this podcast, but you spell out the band's name, Waters, and the E is with, like, Mylar balloons, and the E is deflated. And I'm just – when I was watching that, I was like, I wonder if that was something that just happened or intentional.
You know, I'm going to lie and say it was intentional, but it wasn't. it was one of those things, you know, our art department girl was blowing up the balloon and it popped, but we made do. Nice.
And I wanted to ask, you know, obviously one-shot videos are extremely complicated, and you guys have a few cut points worked into this video, but...
Yeah, two exact.
But it still seems like it was tremendously complicated to kind of get the beats down for that. You mentioned kind of your AD kind of walking with you and kind of helping map that out. Was there any issues during that process, or, you know, and what kind of, like, kind of rehearsal time did you get for that stuff?
Well, very little rehearsal time. We only had the location for about 10 hours. And shooting, I mean, our Steadicam guy was only there for about, I believe, 8 hours. So very little rehearsal time. Like, I knew a lot of the actors, so we already kind of had that trust. And then my girlfriend, who's actually an actress and my writing partner, we went over just the basic details of, like, what we were going to try to get from each thing. So going into it is really simple. I mean, it's just really applying, you know, our vision to that, to each room. And I mean, like, I vibed well with every single person, including Van, who is an amazing performer. So, I mean, it was pretty easy, actually. I mean, like, I've worked with my DP on a lot of things. So, I mean, Yeah, just like my production family going at it, so it felt really natural.
So there is a point in this video where Van, the lead singer, is sat down in a chair and is sort of, you know, subjected to maybe the quickest male to female makeover in a music video that we've seen. It lasts a few seconds, and he doesn't even stop singing to have his makeup or to have his lipstick applied. And yeah. I was wondering where that concept or that kind of turn of events came from. Was that from the band or from you?
Well, it's inspired by Kurt Cobain, like just like a fashion shoot that Kurt Cobain did back in the day. But I had originally pitched a video a while back that had someone dressed in drag, and I've been dying to do something involving demasculation. And so like the idea of I Feel Everything and him going from each room to room, it's kind of like him slowly getting demasculated. So what's more demasculating than literally turning into a woman? So that's kind of where it came to be. It's kind of a mixture of those things.
You know, I've never heard of this Kurt Cobain shoot before, but I'm looking at a picture of it right now.
It's amazing. Yeah, he's got the dress kind of coming down.
And he's wearing a shirt. He's wearing like a white shirt under the dress too.
That's kind of cop out on his part.
And if you want to look at this picture, I'll put a link to it in our show notes, because I've never seen this before. Waters, I know they're on, actually, I think tonight, November 13th, they have I think they're either opening for or playing with Tegan and Sarah.
They just switched over their tour. I believe they were on another tour and they just switched over to Tegan and Sarah.
Yeah, so I think they're a band that we have a few videos on the site for, but not a lot going back to 2011, Alan Cordell video, actually. How did they approach you guys? Did you guys know these guys, or was this a something you pitched on?
Well, I'm a part of a collective called Snow Beach, and essentially my EP sent over the track, loved it, pitched on it, and that's how we are where we are.
And how does Snow Beach work?
So Snow Beach is essentially, it's a director, it's myself and another director, and we essentially came together because we didn't have rep. We wanted to pitch on bigger things, so we figured if we come together, join forces, we would. So, it's just a collaboration. Essentially, my old directing partner is my DP for the collective. We got a producer and another director, and we pitch on stuff, and it's going really well.
And I like the name Snow Beach.
Yeah, it's cool.
Where did that come from?
Not sure. You should ask my executive producer.
So do you plan to kind of keep it kind of as a collective and just kind of you guys, or is there a look to expand now that you've built these connections and that kind of thing?
Well, the idea is to expand, yeah. And, just take over the world.
Nice. That's what we're really all about. We're waiting for the first
world domination
music video collective to literally take over the world.
That's a nice thought.
One day.
One day.
The world could use some taking over every once in a while, and so
the 90s will live again.
Who better than music video directors?
Well, were you I don't know what generation you are or how old you are, Brennan, but were you like an MTV fan back in the day, or like or more raised on internet music videos?
You know, I was actually raised in a very strict household where I wasn't allowed to watch PG-13 or rated R films. So MTV was not on, although I did grow up with a father who did love hair metal, so I did watch a lot of 80s rock videos. Not to say that I liked them, but as I grew up, Fuse was on TV, and then I, caught on to the internet, because who hasn't? And, that's where it comes from, I guess.
It's an interesting combination of being, like, not allowed to watch PG-13 movies, but, like, super into hair metal. It's a very...
It's like, so my dad would, secretly, whenever we'd be in the car, play Motley Crue, but would hide his CDs when we'd go home, you know?
So that's this is what you're describing is weirdly enough somewhat of a pattern that we've seen from music video directors. I could name five or six just off the top. I won't do it because I probably can't. Yeah. But the strict household with the restricted access to things like MTV and maybe I don't know, like comic books and other like forms of visual art is kind of a thread, I think, that music video directors all some like deep down somehow share.
I'm sure it has something to do with like the idea of like you were never really allowed to. Like my mom, for example, broke my Linkin Park CD in sixth grade, saying it was Satan music. So I mean,
well, arguably Linkin Park.
Yeah,
is
I was going to say that.
Pretty satanic.
Point.
Yeah, let's get real.
Right. I share that. I got a DMX CD taken away from me. They didn't break it though. So what CDs did you get taken away from you, Adam Alexander?
CD. Nothing on CDs, but I couldn't watch MTV though. That was not permitted.
That's the devil's work.
And Adam Fairholme, any CDs taken away from you? No. I don't think so. Your house was the house where I was able to watch the R-rated stuff.
Yeah, no. I think that's why I grew up to be a web developer and not a director of anything. I want to say this track is awesome. When you got this, was this like a concept you had in your back pocket, or was this like a situation where you heard the track and this kind of came to life?
Well, my writing partner kept being like, let's explore different hotels. Let's explore different hotels. And then this came along. It's like, hell yeah, this is what to do. And then it just kind of went from there, just building on it. I mean, I was super stoked to get the track because before this, all I'd been pitching on was just shitty electronic music. So I was really stoked to like have something that wasn't like, happy, like let's go fucking party music.
That's interesting you say about the electronic music videos, because we see like we're seeing like so much of those now, and some of them are great, but for me they I have to take them in kind of like phases. I can't take like too many electronic music videos.
Yeah.
But for videos like this where there's like a great like performance up front, it's like really technically like, you know, really amazing to watch, and everything, you know, comes together really well. I feel like that's a really great combo.
I'm huge on the electronic music videos, but I have to say it was like super refreshing to hear this style of grunge rock. It's like totally absent music right now. So yeah, this is an awesome track. I want more stuff like this.
Well, it's like most electronic artists, all they want is like people in the club just partying. Like I've lost countless, you know, I've pitched to, you know, lots of electronic artists and I always lose out. But they want the same thing and it's ridiculous. I mean, like, obviously you've got Vincent Haycock and Tom Haines just slaying it. Outside of that, it's just like electronic music is just really lacking. There's so much you can do with it, but the commissioners just don't want to take the risk.
Occasionally, though, they're like, you'll hear a director talking about how they like electronic music because they like a lot of times the artist doesn't want to be in the video. I know Simone.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
You can do a whole entire narrative with it. It's just the commissioners themselves really don't like taking risk on those videos.
Right, right. And I also feel like with an electronic music video, you're like starting from like three steps behind because the song's usually not great.
Yeah.
You're already like behind the eight ball because it's like, well, this song is shitty, so nobody's coming here for that.
Yeah.
The title of this
song good, then hell yeah, I mean, then you've done your job.
Yeah, right. Yeah, right, totally, right, exactly. And that's why, like, you know, you mentioned Vincent Haycock, and there are some other directors who I think really excel in that EDM area.
I think AG Rojas has a good track record, I think.
And Simon Cash as well. I feel like Simon does some really, like, you know, he gets the opportunity to kind of just do whatever he wants with them, and he's able to kind of like make a music video about a twerking robot, and it's awesome, and it works really well. But
and
yeah,
that video is we should mention
Basement Jaxx.
That's right. Because we gotta let people know what these videos are we're talking
about.
Yeah,
that's true. You're right. They don't have necessarily the reference points that people who run a music video database have.
That's right.
Makes sense.
And some of us aren't paid to watch videos, like some of us on this podcast.
Adam.
So yeah, Adam Alexander. That's what he's doing. And me too.
No.
But if you want to see any of these music videos, we have handily compiled a list of everything we talk about on this podcast, and you can go to imvdb.com/podcast. And then find episode 132, because that is the episode we are currently on. Watch them all. The first one in that list will be I Feel Everything by Waters, which I highly recommend checking out. And we're going to talk about a few other music videos that came out this week, because it was an interesting week for music videos. Notice I didn't say good.
Yeah, you hate.
What's that?
You hated it.
No,
I mean,
no.
There's a couple of good videos this week.
But we should before we get to that, we should talk a little bit about some big news that happened this week.
Yeah.
Because this is something that we've been hearing about for literally years, I think, and that is YouTube's much rumored and much sort of speculated about music service.
Oh, I thought you were going to talk about landing on a comet, but we could talk about this.
Well, that one's running out of battery. But this one is full steam ahead. It is currently in beta. I do not have access to the beta.
No, I signed up.
I signed up as well. I have not gotten in. But so my issue with – we should explain a little bit what this is supposed to be. It is going to be a service tied in with YouTube that allows you to have access to music, I suppose, and music videos ad-free. As well as watching them sit and saving music and music videos offline, so you can watch them offline. I'm not sure why you would want to watch music videos offline, but I guess it's an option if you would like it.
I mean, it makes more sense for obviously the music side,
right? Because I think this is so. There's a few very confusing things about this that I'd like to point out, because I've read numbering in the possibly close to 100 articles, all going, you know, back years about this service, and after every single one, I'm just more confused.
Yeah.
It's a very, very confusing service because YouTube is owned by Google. Google has their own Spotify-like music service that is, in my opinion, not as good as Spotify. I think it's terrible.
It's behind anybody who's doing this also. It's behind, like, Beats Music. It's behind Amazon Prime. Anything that – anywhere you can stream music, Google is behind.
And every time this service is talked about, there's never any specifics talked about whatsoever. Even in their big announcement on Wednesday, they, A, did not give a release date for the service. They barely gave pricing info. Everything was very nebulous. Everything was very confusing.
And the video itself, too. Like, it goes from, like, a clip of, like, Gangnam Style to Chocolate Rain to, like, you know, an OK Go video to just any, you know, to epic rap battles of history. Anything that on YouTube that, like, has music at all is being, like, advertised as being part of this service. So that's... It seems like it's just like it's gonna be YouTube, but now you pay. that's what it means. None of this is exciting to me so far.
Now,
so I would assume that we're gonna see more ads on a regular basis, like probably longer ads.
Oh shit. Well, so is there more to tell about this, Adam, that you want to make sure before we all start kind of kicking dirt on it?
Because YouTube, along with their service, just to confuse people even more, released a new section of YouTube specifically for music. And if you go to YouTube, at the top it used to say what to watch in my subscriptions. Now it says that still, but it also has a music tab. And when you go to that music tab, it is YouTube's attempt at organizing music based on, you know, basically it's a YouTube section of music based on all sorts of different things, like recommended trending music videos, top music videos by genre. But it's worth noting that all of these kind of like, have you ever seen like a bank that obviously used to be a Pizza Hut?
Or like an IHOP with that like blue roof.
Exactly, yeah. Like you're in a bank and the building was obviously built for something else, but they're repurposing it. Like everything about this is just existing elements of YouTube. Like if you click on the mix for new music this week, it's just the same old YouTube playlist format. Which I don't think really works here. I mean, they're trying to kind of fuse music and video in a really super awkward way, trying to just take everything that they have already and kind of repurpose it for something that I don't think it's really built for. So I take YouTube's reluctance to give any like hard details on this for the fact that I don't think they really know what this is. So I'm really interested to see what's going to happen in the next few months.
Yeah, I don't imagine there being any curation involved with any of like the stuff they're displaying. It's all going to be like algorithm based. It's all going to be on, you know, based on stuff you subscribe to or based on people who pay them money. You know, or what your friends are liking on Facebook or something. All of that is going to determine what you see. It's not going to be like them, you know, hand selecting stuff or even hand categorizing stuff. Like, this is where it's going to, like, you can put on a hip hop mix, their new hip hop mix, and like, if you stay on there long enough, you're going to start getting, you know, Epic Rap Battles of History or, you know, some cover of Happy or, you know, something weird. Like, I feel like YouTube's just got too much shit that on their website for them to, like, be able to, like, gear stuff towards people's interests or anything like that. Like, I feel like YouTube works the way it is. I feel like they bring in money. So now we can all start doing some speculation now, because this will be fun. Just blind gut check speculation. Gut check didn't fit in.
Okay. That sense.
Adam Alexander said longer ads on YouTube free, which I could see that makes sense. I see artists putting their music videos behind a paywall. So like you can only see Taylor Swift's new music video if you have the paid service. And she's kind of proven in the last couple of weeks since her album release and in pulling it off of Spotify that like she can, you know, that
just giving it away.
Yeah, that type of move is going to drive can help drive your paid sales. And there's another correlation to this, and that is in like a lot of the Spotify coverage of Taylor Swift. She mentions that she's made more money from Vevo than she has from Spotify. So it seems interestingly timed that like that information comes out along the same time as this music service. And so, you know, it's just an interesting, you know, thing. So I'm ready for some Taylor Swift having to pay to see Taylor Swift music videos.
Well, you've heard me speculate, but Brendan, you were saying you think that also think that he's seen music videos behind a paywall.
Yeah, it's just another way for the labels to kind of gain back what they lost when they lost their CD sales. It's just another way for them to kind of try to take back over the market that piracy is kind of stolen. But I think it's going to, you know, kind of try to shove out the smaller artists and the smaller indie labels, which they're already doing right now, just furthering the Google cult.
Yeah.
Before this was a reality, and before this was like an actual thing that YouTube announced, because for a long time this has sort of been a rumored thing. And you remember a few months ago there were news of, you know, issues with labels and stuff like that. Before that, I really didn't think that music videos behind a paywall was going to be a thing, but I can definitely see that now, especially with something like a Taylor Swift release. I could definitely see, you know, if you are a Google Music Key subscriber, then you can watch this music video and everybody else has to wait a week. Because I think the biggest problem with the service right now is that you're asking people to fork over $10 for something that I'm not even sure people know what the concept is. you know, for Spotify, I gladly pay $10 a month because I know exactly what it is and exactly what I can do with it. I have no clue if I gave YouTube $10, what are they going to, you know, what sort of access are they giving me? Does it buy me time to, like, does it buy me no ads to watch, not have to watch the 15-second ads? Those aren't really that big of a deal for me right now.
Right.
Yeah, the presentation of this key is probably the worst part of it. It's terrible. Terrible marketing.
I'm sure they're getting lots of people who are, like, signing up for the beta and stuff, but just to kind of, like, see what it's all about. But, like, I don't really, like, man, it would really bum me out if you had to, like, but, like, artists, so there is some similarities between Beyonce and Taylor Swift. Each of them, they're both artists who they're, you know, currently, latest album is not available on Spotify. I still haven't listened to the Beyonce album because I only listen to music from Spotify now. So I can't listen to Taylor Swift's album either. I'm like stuck. And Beyonce, essentially, you know, she, in her self-titled album that she released last year, had a music video corresponding with every song, and she's only released a handful of those on the internet. The rest of them, in order to see them, you have to buy the album. And that was, like, essentially those music videos were the only marketing of that album. Everything else was just, like, on the strength of Beyonce doing something that stuff got out there. And, you know, people bought that album. Those music videos have been seen because people have paid for them. And for the most part, have not been really available online. Because, like, that's the thing I question. If a Taylor Swift video is behind a paywall, I mean, we see it all the time when a music video premieres on World Star Hip Hop or some other place. It ends up on YouTube, a ripped version, 12 seconds later, and people see it there. Millions of people see it there otherwise. So, like, this adds another, like, wrinkle to, like, YouTube keeping the video off the free site until it's done on the pay site. It's really strange.
It just means that there's gonna be more pixelated videos out there.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Now you're just gonna see shitty versions of the Taylor Swift video instead of the HD one.
And some of these rips are pretty convincing because I guess we could maybe get into a little bit of the Taylor Swift release this week.
Yeah,
because she released the release was accidentally premiered really early by Yahoo Screen. I'm not really sure the whole story, but there was a version that was up briefly and then came down, and then, you know, that rip was all over Vimeo actually and YouTube a little bit, but I saw like three or four Vimeo embeds really quick. They took it down and they released it on Vivo, I think, and Yahoo Screen later in the day, Joseph Kahn, the director of the video, was, kind of candidly tweeting about it, saying, "Yeah, Yahoo screwed up."
I think maybe Yahoo might have tarnished some relationships with that fuck up right there, because I don't know, like, you don't want to fuck up that type of thing and like accidentally leak a Taylor Swift video on your, like, that's a fuck up. That's pretty,
no big deal.
Yeah, whatever. Who cares? It's no big deal now. Wait till you gotta pay for it. So that is interesting that happened. But we should talk about the video too, I guess.
We have to talk about the video, yeah.
It's directed by Joseph Kahn and Adam Fairholme. You love this video, right?
Not really, no.
No.
Well, let's talk about it a little bit because Taylor Swift has a new album out, of course, called 1989, as Doug mentioned or alluded to. It is not available on Spotify, and not only is she not allowed this album to be on Spotify, she's pulled her entire catalog from Spotify.
Such a weird move. I
consider that a dick move, Taylor.
Dick Taylor.
And so this is a new song, and this is a song is called Blank Space, and it is kind of a nod, if you will, to the fact that she's dated a lot of guys. This I think is the kind of logical conclusion of the last 10 years of the Rick Rubinifying of music, where, you know, Rick Rubin, the producer, every album he touches, the album that comes out, all the songs are about that artist. You know, it's he's a big fan of the self-referential. He's been a hugely kind of influential producer, and although he's not involved on this record at all, I think his fingerprints are kind of all over it. And, you know, the way he's pushed pop music to be so self-referential in the last, you know, 10 or 15 years. But this video takes place at a huge mansion. It's Taylor Swift and this guy falling in love, and then she goes crazy. To the point,
huge,
I think...
Huge mansion.
Yeah, huge, very, very big. And she goes crazy to the point where I think it's supposed to be funny, but I just found it...
It's supposed to be funny.
I think it is, yeah, because she starts, like... Anyway, you got to watch the video to get
it. It is. I just
going,
like that you said
it's lighthearted.
I like that you said supposed to be funny and not funny, and implying that it doesn't hit the mark.
But Brendan, you thought that you got the same vibe from that, like they were taking it like purposefully too far for an effect.
I mean, like they took it far, but they didn't go all the way because obviously it's a Taylor Swift video, so they kind of censored a little bit. So it's like she's stabbing a cake with the blood in it, but it's like they don't give it that moment of like, yeah, she's stabbing a cake, imagining it's her fucking boyfriend. Yeah, it's like a Dior ad gone wrong. And then she fucks up that beautiful car. Why?
I know. I was curious. Can you like envision a way that they faked that? Or like, did she just smash up like that car?
It was too real. It doesn't matter if it was fake. It was too real.
Too real. Man, Joseph Kahn, why are you doing it? I definitely agree that it was supposed to be funny. She like is looking directly into the camera a lot of like, even in some of the performance stuff, like outside of the performance stuff in the narrative, like looking directly into the camera type gag shots. His like the dude's pants fall, his nipples are exposed when his shirt's cut.
Parker Corns reference.
Yeah. It's
what
it's
reference?
Parker Corns.
Oh really?
When Alex cuts off the girl's cuts open her shirt to expose her nipples in front of her husband.
Oh, I didn't catch that. That's right.
Yeah.
Man, and Adam's normally pretty good with the catching the movie references too. You pride yourself on that.
Yeah, I caught that the Shining reference in the Lord video from last
year.
You're
gonna live
I'm
on
off my game this year.
Easy hate.
So yeah. I'm surprised. Where you been, Adam Alexander? This is your.
Yeah, where are you at?
Well, you got to defend this video.
All I have to say is basically the polar opposite of everything you guys just said.
We'll say it.
Bought into the whole thing. I like the self-referential stuff that she's been doing on this album. I think it's I don't know. I'm a sucker for Taylor Swift.
But that's fine. But in terms of the video, like what was working for you in the video?
In this, just the whole thing, like the self-referential bit that she's dated a bunch of guys and kind of trolling her criticisms of you know, having lots of boyfriends, and she kind of takes it a step further where it's suggested that she might like kill them off and it, in a way for sure.
Please
right?
do.
Yeah,
but 30 years ago or 40 years ago, these types of songs were the novelty songs that were part of an album, right? I mean,
well, this is a good song. We're not even going to go. We're not going to the song.
Adam's not even like, you letting you go there.
this is a good.
It's debatable. It's debatable.
It's a fine song. It's just like "Shake It Off" is a pretty good song. And I actually think the video is well done. I think Taylor Swift.
It looks beautiful at times. Like there are some really fantastic looking stuff. But
there's a great part where like she's crying by a fireplace, and we'll include a picture of that because it's pretty weird. But then in the background is some sort of white deer just standing there. It's got a lot of weird little elements.
How about the shot where she's like standing on the horse with her arms out? Like that's weird.
I was into that actually. I like
yeah,
that.
No, it was. That's
Art Department killed it. Let's just say that. Art Department slayed on that video.
Yeah. Crushed it. And it's some of it just looks insane. Like almost like a painting. It looks so clean. But it's in terms of like the concept, this song also makes me a little less bummed that it's not on Spotify. This type of stuff that's on the album, then I'm all right with not having it.
So at the end of this video, there is a little pseudo commercial for an app that you can get called the song is called Blank Space, and the app is called the Blank Space Experience. We tasked Mr. Adam Alexander for downloading it and giving it a try. Adam, what is this app and what does it do?
Yeah, take us through it a little bit. You hit you print, you open it up.
Yeah, basically it's like a fully 360 degree view of the video, and you kind of rotate your phone to follow the characters, and then they threw in some goofy little interactive, like you can click on the pictures of her ex-boyfriends and kind of have a closer look at what damage she's inflicted on the painting. For some reason, you might want to do that, but no, I kind of disliked the technical aspect of it. I don't really know how they did that part, like filming it from every angle. There must have been like multiple cameras, or you guys are better at.
Well,
displaying.
I'm assuming that they probably shot something specifically for the app. I don't think that they were making this the 360 degree angle shot as well as shooting this actual video. They probably made that a side project, would be my guess, without seeing it. My question is this. It was free. Is there like a link to download the album from iTunes in there, or?
Absolutely.
Yeah, big time.
It's right there, and it's huge. It's like almost the thing that draws you first is buy the album, and then you see the little experience.
It's like, buy the album, or do what you downloaded this app for. cool.
There's a Thanks. Great, this app, weirdly enough, yes, thank you, Adam, for taking one for the team.
Yeah.
I'm looking at the iPhone version, and bizarrely enough, it has a very close to perfect 5-star rating out of 330 ratings. one fan helpfully breaks it down into 3 points. Calls this her review triple threat. One, the track is not only one of my favorites from her 1989 album, but for 2014. Two, the music video is the best.
Says a 12-year-old girl.
Oh, yeah, the best I've seen in a very long time. Three, the app is amazing. A treat for fans. I think that kind of sums it up. If you like this stuff, then Taylor Swift is doing it for you.
And my question to Adam Alexander, are you going to keep the app?
I will not keep the app. I will not keep it. It's huge. It's huge. It was 560 meg or something.
Jesus.
It took me an hour to die.
Oh my god.
That's great.
A gigabyte app?
And it isn't anything. It's nothing. It's like it's the entire file of the video file. There's no internet. Yeah. Or anyway. Tiptoe into my Jowdens. Can we talk about that? Can we tiptoe in our Jowdens from Taylor Swift and talk about our someone who's been talking about frequently on this podcast, and that is one Jody Highroller, also known as Riff Raff.
And this music video is directed by one of my favorite directors, Mr. Mickey Finnegan, who directed like Party Rock Anthem for LMFAO, a bunch of LMFAO videos. And yeah, that's a lot other stuff, but mainly LMFAO. Along with Riff Raff. And I think this is like probably if anybody knows a song by Riff Raff, this is probably it. I'm surprised this didn't have a video already.
Yeah, so this was one that, like, he came out with his Neon Icon album, and you know, it was well received. But this was by far the song that, like, was the takeaway song from everybody. It wasn't obviously the lead single or anything like that. But it's like, if you go on Vine or something and do like hashtag tiptoe into my Jowdens, you will see this song used in lots and lots of Vines. And not surprisingly, this video has a bunch of Vine people in it. Riff Raff is pretty active on Vine and still. And they're not really like a main part of the concept of the video, but they are kind of like mixed into some of like some dance portions. And it's kind of like interesting to kind of envision how those Vine stars made their way into this video.
Brendan, has it ever happened to you where, like, you're directing a video and the artist is on the phone, like, calling people to come down to the set to appear?
No, I haven't done any real rap videos. I'm waiting for that, though. I've had a commissioner on an iPad watching the entire Beyonce visual album while we're trying to pay attention, but that's about the closest to that I've gotten.
The commissioner will will remain unnamed, unless you want to tell us.
I don't want to tell you.
That's better than it would be. Better, it would be worse if they're like watch on their iPad watching like the Real Housewives of New Jersey or something like that. The Beyonce visual blast. Album. We can get a pass for that.
Wait, full blast. It was on.
Full blast. Yeah, doing
I can't. Okay, maybe not. Artist
performing and it's just like Beyonce up in my ear.
Instead of playback, there. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Bow down, bitches. Yeah, that would get in the way. Adam, you mentioned it. I have a feeling that maybe these Vine characters were not part of the original treatment. They don't really seem to like fit into the concept very much, and it's kind of got like a loose narrative. This video could have just been Riff Raff tiptoeing Jordans the whole time, and I would have accepted it. But it's a lot more than that, and it And I think Vicky Finnegan did a great job. But yeah, I have a feeling that these people from Vine just kind of showed up because they're like very quick shots of them.
Buster Beans is in it.
Buster Beans.
Travis LaPorte's dog that he puts shoes on all the time is in it.
Yeah, that's he's your favorite. My favorite person from Vine in this video is Jody Husky, Riff Raff's dog. Jody Husky's the best, and it's
best
funny.
Part of the video,
yeah, so great. Jody Husky's like the greatest dog ever, and it's so funny too because on the album cover, Jody Husky is in it, but he's like a tiny little puppy, and in this video, he's a big husky, and probably not fully grown, but he's a large dog, and he's great. I like he seems like such a mild mannered dog. You need to go look at Riff Raff's Vine and see Jody Husky. I don't know if it's close proximity to marijuana smoke or he was just like a chill ass dog, but either way, Jody Husky seems like a chill ass dog.
None of these people are lit at all. You have to recognize them from their silhouettes. I really want to know the backstory of why these people are in there and how they got to be.
Andy Milonakis is lit. I feel like But he makes a little bit more sense, his presence, because he's in a rap group with Riff Raff. But yeah, nobody else. Maybe they like ask for extras to come down and Jordans. Who knows? Who knows? But it's a fun video. It's icy.
There's a Monster Energy drink product.
It's a very big one. And Riff Raff also does. He's got the he's got the grills in with the fangs, all with the sharp teeth. Which also was made famous in one of his vines, and he does the same move. He says, "My main goal is to blow up and then act like I don't know nobody," like that. And he's got those teeth in. I just did that. Let's talk about Fergie.
Doug took 30 seconds to explain a 6-second vine.
That was good.
Yeah, Fergie.
Fergie, L.A. Love, in parentheses, La La, by Fergie featuring YG, directed by Rich Lee. This is a popular video this week. Walk us through this one, Adam.
Which Adam?
Whichever.
Well, this
it turns.
Well, first of all, I want to mention that Fergie's almost 40.
Yeah, I looked that up too.
Yeah, I did look it up. She's 39. She's the same age as me, but 10 years older.
Right, which is not the same age.
Right. So this video is one of those. Fergie hasn't done anything in a while. I think. We did have a little party. Never killed nobody. All we got from 2013, but I don't think that went that far. But the last stuff we really like got serious, like full on Fergie style, is like 2007, like Clumsy and like Fergalicious, all that the Duchess album stuff. So this is kind of fun to see this kind of like big pop stuff from her again. This video is about places. It's one of those in the time honored tradition of songs about lots of places, and L.A., the titular place, is mentioned quite frequently, but she's talking about...
She always ends up back in L.A.
Always ends up back in L.A., no matter where she goes. And they've got a giant, terrifying bus that they're riding around that I really like in this video.
And it's got to be a thing that, like, we should... Someone recognizes. It's like, oh, there's the Wackadoodle bus or whatever it is. They know it.
Yeah, it's probably the Wackadoodle bus.
It's potentially
Burning Man.
Is that what it is? Burning Man?
It's totally like a Burning Man car.
It does feel like a Burning Man car. You're right.
Yeah, it's like Burning Man in what they call L.A. I don't really know this form of LA that they're
right there. It's an event. So this is not familiar with this version of LA. This is not your life. You don't ride around in a crazy bus with a face.
I do on Saturday and Sunday, but Monday through Friday, no.
Right.
Typically, it's homeless people, you know, Korean barbecue.
That sounds appealing.
Sunset, but nothing like this. I wish.
No fame. That's all right. Fergie lives a little bit different life. I mean, when you look like that and you're 39, you have a different life. That's why you looked up her age, right, Adam? Because you were like, "Holy shit, I still am physically attracted to this lady. Let me see how old she is." And then it was 39, and you went, "Whoa."
Does it feel wrong?
I couldn't tell if, like, in my head, 39 is old or not. Because at first I'm like, holy shit, that's old. And then I'm like, holy shit, I'm not that much younger.
Yeah, it's not really that old. It's just we've had a string of people on this podcast. Like, Jennifer Lopez, I think she's a little older. I'm not sure. We were all surprised at that. And then remember, Lenny Kravitz is, like, 55.
All right, Kravitz surprised me. J-Lo feels...
No way.
J-Lo feels old.
Yeah, hold on. Let me get the exact age. I think it's 53.
He's definitely in his 50s though, and he's in great shape. He's in better shape than I even knew existed. I even knew that I didn't even know you could be in that.
He's 50, so he's but you know that's only 10 years away from 60 years old. I don't right. like, yeah.
It's you, when you put it you're, that way. Your comparison of like this 10-year thing. It's like oh, this 10-year thing.
You guys want to see me do some math? Because I got
So this podcast is for people to tune in for. The one thing I can't look at Fergie, you guys. I got over it surprisingly, but whenever I see Fergie for like the first time in a while, the first thing that pops into my head is that picture of her after she peed her pants. You guys know this picture?
Oh come on!
Oh. I need to see this.
Yeah, so she like you know, I guess it happened. She was performing live and she peed her pants, and you see it that she's not it actively happening, but the aftermath. It was captured in photograph, and cool. I picture that still. I just like every time I see her dancing, I like it feel like her leg is sticky, and then I'm like, oh, she is also very attractive. I'm over it. I'm over it, but it was front of mind.
Did you guys notice any of the cameos before it ran the credits? Because I didn't.
I didn't watch the credits.
There's a lengthy credit sequence on this.
Yeah, there's like Kelly Osbourne's in there somewhere, and Hilary Swank, and I still don't see any of them, even watching it a second time, except in the credits.
I mean, are they in the party scenes, or are they in the wackadoo bus? I'm happy I remembered that fake name I came up with. I don't want to talk about this video anymore. I did not see them. No, I can't. I still can't see them. They use a drone in this, which is fun. I want to talk about shape-shifting by Color War. How's that sound, guys? We are on board with talking about this?
Basically, what we have here with this video is three young girls. They are ballerinas. And basically what the video does is it kind of takes them out of the context of ballerinas, at least in the first part. And they're just in like their regular street clothes and doing like full-on like cool ballet moves and stretches like on the streets of somewhere. And it's kind of cool to see... New York, and I kind of just thought it was cool to see that was what I liked about it, both the technicality of some of the crazy flexible stretches that they're doing, as well as like kind of taking them out of the element. And like if you've seen these girls doing this on the street, you'd be like, wow, that's some crazy things that you don't see on the street every day.
That's true. And they definitely like the street is an element. They're not just doing stretches, they're like stretching within like scaffolding and elements of the city. I think them being out of the environment that you would normally see ballerinas in, ballet dancers, it like makes it, and it's probably why it's shot, but like did you guys like feel that like they were kind of like sexualizing these girls in this video as well, or is it kind of just like the atmosphere, them outside of the ballet, because it's not like not traditional moves that they're doing, but like they're definitely like close-ups of their mouth as they're eating and stuff like that. Did you guys like pick up on that as well?
Oh, that's weird. I didn't notice that, but now that I'm looking at it, I kind of get that. Like the second they leave the studio, it is kind of sexualized
a bit.
And so I was like, I watched the video, and like when I saw that it was directed by a lady, I was a little bit more comfortable about that. But I was just curious because like. I watched it again to see if like it was something that they were like intentionally doing, and it's the stuff seemed like traditional, kind of like it didn't seem like the dancing was done in a way that was meant to be provocative, but I don't know, it just kind of like felt that way a little bit to me.
it's suggestive, but not. I don't find to the point of being offensive. Maybe. I'm sure someone was offended. Someone up there.
I actually went read the comments of this video on YouTube to see if there was any weirdness going on. I really couldn't find any. People were more just intrigued and by the dancing, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think it's also I guess the one thing you kind of search for in this video, in a video like this, is what's the hook of it, or what's like the kind of the concept? Is it them being young? Is it them being ballerinas and being outside of a place you would normally see them? Because they're in Times Square for like a half of the video at night with all the weirdos that you find in Times Square. So is that it? And I'm not sure, after watching this video, you know, once or twice, I'm not really sure what is the concept of it, or what is the meaning of them being so young, or them being out and about. I guess that kind of missed me a little bit. But I don't think they were too sexualized.
It's and like their age is definitely, like, they have braces, like it's, you know, because it can be like, you know, ballerinas, there can be some ambiguity in terms of age and stuff, but like the braces definitely like kind of hammers it through that these are definitely like teenagers, like younger girls. I'm not sure. Like, it just, I like this video because I felt like it had like a really, like, it had like an energy that seemed really natural and like, kind of like radiated off these girls in this video, and like it was captured really well. You know, and it seemed like, you know, I picture like teenage girls, they're like leaving their sodas behind in the park and like just like running and dancing around people who are like trying to work and stuff with like no real like perception or consciousness of like what their actions are doing to the people around them. And so like they're not really like conscious of the fact that they're like dancing around in Times Square with all the weirdos around. They're like just doing what they're doing, ballet or leaving sodas behind or whatever it was. And like that was like really, I don't know, it seemed like a really like natural like energy that this video tapped into that I thought was really interesting. Is there any from the watchlist guys that really jump out to you, fellas?
Marina and the Diamonds.
Yeah, let's talk about that one.
I mean, she always has great videos. I'm a little bummed that Casper didn't direct this video, but I mean, even saying that, it's a fucking great video, and it's such an amazing reference to old Hollywood.
Which has kind of been her thing as an image, right? I mean, even back...
Yeah, but this one, I feel like stepped it up even more, because I mean, Casper kind of has that style, but like, this stepped it up even more, like, you know, with the kind of grease that blends and beauty lighting.
And this was
Casper Balzlev,
who did
a lot of her videos from 2011 to 2013, including, I think, some of her more well-known songs like Prima Donna and Radioactive.
And the person who did direct this video is Chino Moya, who you might know from directing the Digital Witness video by Saint Vincent, which is also a fantastic video.
Such a great video.
And you can kind of see some kind of stylistic similarities between the Fruit. That's the name of the Marina and Diamonds song, Fruit. We hadn't mentioned that. Some stylistic similarities between that and this and the Saint Vincent video in terms of the style of filmmaking, like really composed shots and that kind of thing, and a lot of like care taken into how each shot was set up. But yeah, I really enjoyed this video too. I thought it was super, super, super sweet.
That's a sexy and mysterious.
Yeah, it was one of those S words that I was going to go with. I couldn't decide on which one I wanted to go with, so I just made the sound of an S for 10 minutes, which is totally a normal thing to do. The shawarma is kicking in.
We actually didn't get to all the videos that we wanted to talk about because we were talking about Music Key. But we should mention that some of the other ones, and we'll put these in the list. Why not?
Well, I think we can fit them all in if we all go around and say our favorites from the week. Because I actually...
Brian Ferry, Loop De Lee by Aoife. And, oh, she's amazing.
which was an IMDb pick last week, and it's a fantastic video. That'll be in the show notes. And what are some of the others, Adam? What was there was a Broads video this week that was super cool.
Isn't it Broods?
I think so.
That's right, Broods. Laugh, L-A-F. I guess this, you can pronounce it either individually or as a word. Was a great video from this week, and that was directed by Jordan Arts. We also had color. Well, never mind. That's it. And Brandon, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And do you have any? Are you shooting anything right now? Do you have anything coming up that we should watch out for?
A few things that might be booked soon, and I'm working on a short film. Other than that, nothing really. Just chilling. But a short film coming out soon. Short film.
Are you? You're on Twitter, right?
I am.
Where can we find you on Twitter?
I'll have to double check that because I don't ever check my Twitter.
Never mind. Don't follow Brendan on Twitter. Do not follow.
I'm not gonna get a lot of that.
Follow Taylor Swift. T Swift 13.